it's important for Asian Americans to be counted and to be present at a table in a picture of folks who are making decisions.
Hey everybody, welcome to Identity Unveiled. We are a lifestyle platform that talks about career, beauty, health, and to help support the advancement of Asian American women to the executive ranks.
Our guest today is Joanne Kwong. She's the president of Pearl River Mart, the world's first Chinese American department store based in New York. You can find just about anything at this iconic Asian emporium, from Buddha statues to rice snacks to chopsticks, along with countless other items that are crafted by Asian Americans. In fact, walking through the doors, you'll not know what you want, but you'll leave exactly knowing what you were looking for. So really excited to have you here, Joanne.
Thank you so much for having me. What a pleasure.
So I know there's a very rich history to Pearl River Mart. Could you give us just the highlights of its rich history and your involvement in its iconic rise?
Absolutely. Yeah, my father-in-law is the founder of Pearl River Mart, and it was started in 1971. And he and my mother-in-law were student activists, and they were part of this rabble-rousing group that was based in Chinatown. And they really created the store as a place for the community to meet, but also to be subversive in a way, really to share Chinese culture with their new American neighbors, but also to create a little taste of home for people of the Chinese diaspora who found themselves in New York from all different places. So they are from Taiwan, immigrants from Taiwan. And my parents were also immigrants around the same time in New York City, and they were from the Philippines, Chinese from the Philippines. So, you know, that's how it started. And turns out that New Yorkers love things that are, you know, aesthetically beautiful and colorful. And at the time, they were also illegal because trade was embargoed with China. So all of the things that they got, they kind of had to, you know, 5 decades later, we could say, like, smuggle in or, you know, kind of make a few friends, you know, at the border. So basically, New Yorkers love illegal things too. And so immediately it became this really just iconic New York City place where you could find beautiful things at an affordable price. So for many New Yorkers, it became part of their origin story, whether that was like their first apartment, their first dorm, their wedding favors, and even for businesses and production. So we actually, you know, supply to a lot of movie sets and Broadway shows. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of really took off during the 90s because the fashion and magazine world discovered it. So you could find these beautiful things like brocade slippers and robes and kind of pair it with like high-low fashion. And, you know, over the years, it just became this beloved place. So we're in our 51st year and I became involved, you know, for a long time, it had to migrate out of Chinatown because the rents got too high. Every 10, 15 years, they'd have to renew the lease. And so they were in Soho for a really long time. And Soho, for those of your listeners who are in New York, it's now a booming shopping district. But before, it was really just kind of large loft spaces where artists went for cheap rent, which is kind of funny today. But basically, it was there for so long, and they would always kind of serve as a pillar to whatever block they were on, and then the rent would get too high. So in 2016, I was working, actually in my second career. I was a lawyer first, and then I became a nonprofit communications executive. And my husband and I really just wanted to help them figure out the next steps. And it turned out that what they really wanted was kind of a family member to continue the business, but with integrity. I think they would have rather retired than like see it, I don't know, carved up or sold off. So I decided to jump in, and it's been an interesting 6 years. Obviously three of those years were during a pandemic, but we have opened, we've opened several stores already. Four stores were independent stores. We have three open now. And we actually had to already like rebuild a flagship because of rental issues, and still do community events because that was our history at our core. So we gather Asians and Asian Americans for art and culture and food.
You guys are, I mean, your store isn't just, you know, a mart in a traditional sense. It does more than just products, right? I mean, there's you host performances and talks. There's a lot of collaborations in place.
Yeah, the products have always been kind of like beside the point. Like again, the Chen started out as activists, and this was always kind of just a way to bridge relations between people and to humanize the Chinese American community and then the broader Asian American community over the decades. And I think when I took it over, Asians and Asian Americans have different needs at this point, so we're not just trying to be understood. We're literally like, this is our home. So at this point in time, we actually, instead of just importing things, which we still do, we highlight a lot of Asian American entrepreneurs and really serve as like a kind of a launch pad and a platform for their businesses or their creative endeavors.
So how did Pearl River Mart get initial funding the second time around when
Oh.
the eyes of the New Yorkers came and said, "Where's Mart?"
Back in 1971, I think it was every radical friend who threw in like $100 became a shareholder. So it was actually a cast of thousands back then. But yeah, it was really difficult because, at the time that I took over, there were a lot of customers. That's really hard for New York City businesses, and that's rent and the cost of labor. I mean, it's really difficult to run a small business in New York City. And the initial funding that we got, I think at first I didn't really know what I was doing. I'm trained as a lawyer and as a communicator, but numbers and business were, definitely was not my thing. But on paper, I was like, oh, we should go get funding. I think it's hard to do that in this environment, especially for a brick and mortar retail store. In the age of Amazon, it's so hard to convince people that that's a worthwhile use of their funding and time. So we really went to friends and family, and they're people who believe in mission-based retail. I mean, it's a little bit unusual, but we're not really looking to kind of sell off in 7 to 9 years. Like we're looking to keep this going for kind of like our kids and our kids' kids for many more years.
That's incredible. I heard that you're a partner of Gold House, which is an AAPI accelerator for everyone listening today. Tell me about how you collaborate with them to incubate companies.
Oh, well, I'm not a partner at Gold House, but I'm a member and a supporter. And Gold House is relatively new. They're our friends, and ever since they were founded, we loved, the purpose of what they were doing. And in any way that we could, we partnered several times. So actually, the last time we partnered over APA Heritage Month and helped them. They have a wonderful program called Gold Rush, where they support young entrepreneurs or emerging entrepreneurs, because some of them are quite successful now. And basically, what we have is a physical environment. There aren't many Asian American retail stores, so I think it makes a difference. Like if you have your food product that's in a Whole Foods, you're competing against the world of food. And when you have your product on our shelves, we've already taken away like 95% of that competition because our products are only by Asian Americans, and we're actually pretty careful how we curate our products. So last APAM, we're super excited to welcome all of these products in a physical space so that a lot of these creators and founders can visit their products at a store, and point their customers there. So it's great for them. It's great for us too. So I think that's how we're always trying to support other businesses and thrive together.
How do you
I
determine what products to bring into your market?
It's there are a couple of things. I hesitate because it's basically feeling, it has to be a great product. I think we know our customers really well, and our customers are very like New York. They're very urban. They have good taste, and they want good quality. The stories also have to be really great too. So, is the creator behind this product, are they doing something that's going to help the community? Are they creating a product that solves a problem, for our community as well? I like to point to one of our friends. They created Covery, which is an eyewear company. So they created these elevated fit glasses because many Asians and Asian Americans have low bridge noses, and our glasses are always slipping down because our noses are not high enough. And I like asked them to come in immediately just because that was like something that they were solving a problem for. I knew it was going to be a great company. So that's just one example of kind of when you see it.
What are some of your best-selling brands, Joanne?
Well, so I kind of talk about the products in terms of kind of the cultural traditional products. So it's like three buckets, and I think it represents the Asian AAPI community, which is that there are kind of like retro products that people remember from their childhood, nostalgic. You know, those might be like White Rabbit candies or Tiger Balm or, you know, certain types of comfy slippers, brocade slippers. So those are like nostalgic things that we still sell. Then there are these new brands that are by AAPI entrepreneurs. And then there's also still Asia. So I still go sourcing in Asia, you know, once a year. I take the whole family, all generations. And we Instagram everything, and it's really fun. So this last year, we went to Thailand, and pre-pandemic, we were able to go to Japan, and we went to China and Taiwan the year before. So those are kind of the three buckets of products. And it's really hard to say which ones are the best selling, just because we sell so much, like all categories. It's clothing and gifts and toys and food now, books as well. So we really try to kind of keep it broad and have it be a place where you could find a little bit of everything.
You have a lot of direct-to-consumer experience, you know, with e-commerce. And what is the best way to launch, in your experience, with for Asian American entrepreneurs that have direct-to-consumer companies?
I mean, I think a lot of them are doing a fantastic job because they're kind of built for it, you know. So creators who are Gen Z and millennials, like they're native to creating content, you know, TikToks and reels and videos, and having that go viral and just great word of mouth, having support from places like a Gold House or a Pearl River, really means a lot. So it's a really exciting time, I think, for many folks in the AAPI business community.
I'm curious about your kind of entree into this. I mean, you went from lawyer then right into supporting your in-laws and running this business. How did you make that transition?
Very abruptly, I think. I was a lawyer for many years, a litigator, so trial attorney. I also taught at Fordham Law School, and I was a federal clerk. And then I switched also abruptly. To work at a women's college, Barnard College at Columbia University. And I worked in the women's space, women's leadership space for 10 years. And that's where I really learned how to do a lot of things, because it was, I wouldn't say a small nonprofit, but it was small in its category of colleges. And I think when you're in an organization that, you know, doesn't have the full resources, you are able to punch above your weight. So I was always able to do things that were not in my job description. So I was head of communications. You know, one weekend they were looking to take kids to lobby on Capitol Hill. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I'll go. You know, I didn't have kids at the time, wasn't, you know, like didn't have anything better to do. And then I became like their head of government relations as well. And then community relations followed. And then I did, you know, their global programming for women. So it was just like, you know, I think when you volunteer for things, sometimes things happen. So I think I was positioned well, like when my in-laws, you know, when they had this astronomic rent increase, it was a fivefold increase on their rent. So, you know, just to give some context, it was like $1 million a year for rent. And then it jumped to $6 million a year. And that's just really untenable for any small business in New York City. It was actually untenable for a lot of the corporate chains that were in the Soho neighborhood as well. So at first, we really just tried to figure out like what were their next steps. We weren't really planning to get involved, but the business is somewhat unusual and like peculiar. And because it's so like passion led by my in-laws, it would have been a hard business to just kind of like plop into, I don't know, an investor's hands or something. Not that they wanted that. Yeah, I still work with my in-laws. My mother-in-law is my office mate. We have a great time.
Well, let's talk about your activism. You know, just recently in June, President Biden signed into law a bill sponsored by Congresswoman Grace Meng. Establishing an 8-person committee or commission to study the potential of creating a National Museum of Asian Pacific American History and Culture. So you were appointed by Senator Schumer, congratulations,
Thank you.
To serve on this commission. So tell us a little bit about that role.
Well, just to back up a little bit, I think I was a political science major in college. I went to law school. I got a master's in political science. So I've always loved just the thought of civic participation. And to be honest, like in my previous careers, like just as a lawyer, working too many hours. And I think when I was working at the at Barnard at the Women's College, I didn't have time really to be as active. And now, just as the principal of this Asian American organization, whether it's business or nonprofit, I think there's meaning in being counted. So I think slowly just having the flexibility in my schedule to join more things. And one of the things that had a pretty big impact was at the start of the pandemic, we were just trying to do our best. It really felt like Pearl River, at the time, the city was having such issues with getting PPE, right? So the masks and we had this expertise importing things from China. So that was something that we were very active in. So as a result of some of that work and just kind of being there, one of the things that I was appointed to was the New York City Small Business Advisory Council, and was really working to kind of reopen the city. So that was just, some of the things that I kind of started to work a little bit more in civic life. And, it's important, I think, for Asian Americans to be counted and to be present at a table in a picture of folks who are making decisions, So I think because, my previous experience working in community relations and government relations, and nonprofits, like it felt natural to me to join some of these things. And so for when the commission came about, first of all, Congresswoman Meng is incredible, such an inspiration. She also happens to be my high school classmate. So
Really?
I've watched her just sacrifice so much and work so hard for the Asian American community. The fact that this bill went through, this is her bill that she wrote, and it's going to have such an impact for my kids, our kids, our kids' kids, to have this amazing museum that will live and document our community. To be quite honest, the offer or the suggestion came at a time when I was really like did not have any capacity at all to volunteer. But I really felt like if you're called to service, you have to do it, and especially something that has so much meaning for kind of our future generations. So yeah, I think to your point, where it's an 8-person commission. I think the other commissioners have not yet been appointed. So maybe after the election, they will be. It was actually two people were to be appointed by each leader of in Congress. So, Senator Schumer is one, still is, and the other, well, the other two are set because there's Congressman McCarthy and Senator McConnell, and then Nancy Pelosi just announced that she's stepping down
Right.
today. So
So you have a very active civil life. You serve on several boards and commissions. You're also a mother of two boys. I mean, how do you do it all?
I don't know. Some things have to always go sometimes. So the house is a wreck. The kids are still alive, which is good. But yeah, I think you try your best in every way. And also, I think this is such a great time, for Asian Americans too. There's so much energy, and I really do feel like if there are opportunities that come, to try to grab them, because the time might pass. You never know. Like, hopefully, this moment of energy like continues, for our community. But I also have a great husband. He picks up a lot of the load. And also extended family. So, I work with my in-laws who are great babysitters, and my mother is also in New York City. So I think that helps a lot. It really helps to have a community, but to also like do things that you're really excited about. So I'm excited to, stay up late and be part of some of these groups and to work on our store and different activations.
How do you decide at this point in your career, this point in your life, what to say no to?
That's such a hard question, right? Like, you want to say yes to everything. I think it has to be something that you feel like you can really make a difference and really do a good job at. So maybe there's something that I feel like I have some expertise to share. But also at this point, like something that I can learn from too. I sit on the boards of New York Public Radio and it's the Meatpacking District and my alma mater. But yeah, like I want to learn just how to make organizations strong. And that's always something like really interesting to me. I don't know, I probably am overextended at this point, but like, but also the people have to be great. Like if the people aren't great, it's really not worth your time.
Now you mentioned something that's really relatable to all our listeners today is the personal life can be a total wreck and everyone relates to that. You know, in areas that you feel that you're struggling the most, you know, we interview a lot of successful women and it's great, but we really want to hear how difficult it's been. And so what are some areas that you've set up boundaries in your greatest area of struggle?
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, it's hard to think about anything normal because the pandemic has been so hard. So I think the last, you know, pandemic was really a struggle, especially as a small business owner. So, you know, the first like couple of weeks, I really felt like, you know, to have to furlough all of our employees and to close all the stores, like I almost felt like crying all the time. So like, it was like the sneeze that always wanted to come out. You just felt like you wanted to cry all the time. And the next 2 years were so difficult, just keeping everything afloat. And a PPP process was very difficult for us. So just kind of coming back was quite hard. I think the reality of life as a small business owner is kind of harder than anything I've ever done. You know, working as a lawyer or at a nonprofit, it's infinitely harder. So I joke around because my mom, my Chinese mom, is always like so angry at me because I've left all of these like well-paying, like easier jobs for like harder jobs, longer hours, less pay, you know. But I do feel like, you know, the things that I'm doing, you know, I explain them to my sons and they know that we're active in our community and that we work with a lot of people. We're making some impact in businesses. And I think we're playing a part, you know, in our community progressing. And to me, that means a lot, you know. And even when I was thinking about leaving the women's leadership space and coming to this space, I kind of thought to myself, oh, there, you know, there are many women who can, you know, keep that space, that movement going. But the pool of Asian Americans is smaller. Just because of our numbers, right? So I think this is a better use of my time. So that's kind of the thought process there. I think the difficulties, it's really hard, like to raise kids, especially in New York City, you know, where there's not a lot of space, you know, to have to get things done. And then there's also so many demands on your time too, because, you know, people have a lot of, you know, events and engagements. And, you know, I've naturally put myself into an area where there are entrepreneurs and people who are doing lots of great things. So that's so exciting, but it's also very tiring. So as far as boundaries, that's a great question. I definitely do set boundaries because otherwise you can't be your best, you know, because you're so tired. So I also like have boundaries for example, for my family and my husband, because like if he tells me like he doesn't want to go out to things, like I absolutely respect that because I don't even want to go too sometimes, you know. So I very carefully kind of like pick the things that we do. And I think it has more impact, you know, when you're careful and you don't just like kind of go to everything or, you know, participate in everything.
Now, your upbringing is quite diverse as well. So your daughter, Chinese immigrants from the Philippines, but she grew up in Astoria, Queens and Seoul.
Yes.
So, you know, when you think about your upbringing, how has your cultural background influenced the way that you lead yourself today?
I loved growing up in New York. It's not the easiest place to grow up in, but I think it makes you a very strong adult and just, you know, kind of street savvy. And you're able to really like, you can talk to people, you know, people from everywhere, because you have to, right? Like whether it's in the subway or, you know, just out and about, you know, I think that had a really big impact. And then you mentioned Korea. So my dad worked there. So we were there as an expat family. When Korea was quite young, he actually went to work on the power plants that were formed, you know, when Seoul was kind of rebuilding. That was also really impactful because we were able to travel around Asia and to see our extended family in the Philippines on a more regular basis. And I think that opened up the world to me, right? You know, because some Asian Americans growing up in the United States is hard, you know, because there's a lot of racism and discrimination. And somebody like my dad was always so proud of being Chinese. And because we had seen that growing up in Asia, and we're also exposed to all these different cultures in a place that, like New York, that has so many people, I think it instilled a lot of confidence in me. And then luckily, you know, as I became a professional, you know, that could have been squashed, like, and it is squashed for many girls, you know, like quite early, like in the middle school years, they don't participate as much and I don't speak up as much. I think for me, like having those as backbones meant a lot. And for my own children, like, I think it's very cool to be able to take them into different countries and where they feel comfortable, you know? So I think having kind of global travelers, even though it was really hard when they were kids to take them around, that was, I don't know, I think it wasn't really a goal, but it's something that makes me super proud, you know, that you can drop them in any part of the world. And they'll probably get along. They'll get something to eat and they'll probably find a place to stay, which is good.
Well, thank you so much, Joanne. You've dropped so many nuggets of wisdom and we would love to have you back one day. If you're in New York, for everyone listening out there, be sure to check out Pearl River Mart in New York City.
Thank you so much. This is such a pleasure. Thanks for everything you're doing for all women in the Asian American community.